You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello, and welcome back to the Corner House Weekly podcast after our short Easter break. I'm your regular host, Sarah Perks, Programme and Engagement Director, and I'm joined by my also regular contributor, the film buff slash nerd, Mr. Andy Willis of the University of Salford. This week, we look at our two new releases. We've got a documentary about Creation Records, which of course covers that small local band, what were they called? Oasis, that's it. And also we have a French Cold War spy thriller called Farewell. We're also going to find out about an amazing family connection between one of our artists and one of our team, which was revealed by our new Cartographies exhibition. And of course, we have our What's On and our staff recommendation. Let's start with our new release documentary. It's called Upside Down, the Creation Records Story. It's about the legendary record label and, of course, its infamous Scottish leader, Alan McGee. This caught my eye at the Berlin Film Market, but I've only got to watch it recently. I also know we've got a really loyal audience for music-related films, and particularly, of course, when there's a link to Manchester. So, Andy, first of all, tell us a bit, like, going back a little bit before we talk about the film, where did this music documentary trend come from? I'm sure you've got a quick history of it.
Well, the real kind of impact of music documentaries was in the 1960s, kind of, I suppose, in parallel with the development of popular culture, popular music, all of those sorts of things more generally. So things like D.A. Pennenbacher's Don't Look Back, the Bob Dylan film, the enormous Mike Wadley Woodstock film, the Rolling Stones documentary about the Altamont Festival where the person was killed. So I think there was, from that period on, in tandem really with an interest in popular music, people thought, well, if there's films about popular music, then we'll be able to sell them. I suppose it also led to them casting lots of music stars in fiction films as well. So I think it's really the kind of coming together of those two industries.
And do you like music documentary as a kind of general rule? There was big hits like Buena Vista Social Club, but it's not really pop music, I guess. But I'm hard pushed to think of a good strong list of music documentaries.
Well, I think if you're interested in the subject, then you'll usually find a documentary interesting. I think that, to a certain extent, goes hand in hand with most documentaries, but I think with music even more so. So certainly if you don't like a certain genre of music, then it's unlikely that you're going to like a documentary about, you know, Judas Priest if you don't like heavy metal or something like that. Although, of course, there are exceptions. Everybody raved about the Anvil documentary that was on last year. I've seen that, and that's a genre of music I'm not particularly interested in, but it was the characters in the documentary that really worked. So I suppose if a documentary has really interesting characters, then it can kind of overcome the limitations of its subject. But I think it's a rare occasion that that happens. I think a lot of, particularly music documentaries, are very dependent upon the audience being interested in that type of music.
Yeah, like This Is Spinal Tap.
Well, I think This Is Spinal Tap, of course, it's a real band. And again, that I think because they're so characterful, then it was able to step beyond its initial sort of rock audience.
So back to Upside Down. What do you think of this rockumentary?
Well, let's just put it now into context with what I've just said. I didn't like the bands and I didn't like the documentary.
Okay, surely it's got something about it that's interesting.
Well, I think I have to say, not knowing much about those, I was interested to find out the backstory, and I did find some of it engaging. It did open my eyes to lots of things, and that was, you know, me as someone who, in that period, didn't really listen to that kind of indie alternative music. So I was given lots of information, and I came away from it knowing a lot more than I went into it, and I suppose, on one level, that's all you can ask of a documentary film.
I mean, I am interested. I had flashbacks to various points in my youth, although I think the times I was most interested is when they mentioned America, so maybe I was more into American music. And there was albums that I'd completely forgotten about, like Sugar, Copper Blue, does anyone remember that? And, you know, various other things that were really interesting and took me back to different times. I thought there was a few too many talking heads. I would have liked to have seen some other documentary conventions utilised. What do you think about that?
Well, I thought there was a few too many talking heads, and there was a few too many men talking heads as well. I mean, it was a very male, very quite macho sort of film, I thought. There were women interviewed, but they seemed to have bought into the kind of image of Creation Records, the kind of gung-ho, drug-fueled, all of that sort of thing. And I, at the end of it, I was a bit like, come on, this is all a bit macho, isn't it? Let's have something a bit more interesting. But maybe that's, you know, that type of rock and roll. It is very macho like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I couldn't remember any women now you mention it. But there's some good local characters, John Robb and people like that come up quite often, actually. So that makes it interesting, particularly to local audiences. And I think if you're into your music and you're either into it now or this recent history, then I think there'll be something in it for you. You'll really enjoy hearing about it and or maybe reminiscing, perhaps, if indeed you were there, as people always try to say they were.
Yeah, I think reminiscing, that's a good one. I mean, I've mentioned the documentary to a few people who are planning to come and see it, and they've very much been looking forward to reliving their youth, if you like.
Okay, so let's sum it up. Who's it for? Musos?
Well, I think people who remember that period, people who are around, into that type of music. Yeah, what any documentary like that is, really. I think if you are interested in that period and that type of music, then you'll love the documentary. If you're not into it, then maybe I'd wait for it to appear on TV.
Okay, and I just like to reminisce about my time watching Oasis at Main Road, and I got trampled on very, very violently, so that's what I remember from that. Okay, we've got a very different second new release. We've got the French language espionage film Farewell. Now, I haven't actually seen that, but Andy, you have. Tell us about this.
Well, if you could have a film that was set in the 1980s, set behind the Iron Curtain, it's mostly set in Moscow, that could be more particular about how they've recreated that era, I'd like to see it. The actual setting of this film, the way they recreate Moscow of that period, is absolutely amazing. However, having said that, I did find it a little bit over the top in terms of how precise it was about, you know, the labels on things, the type of cars, the roads that they were walking along, all of those sorts of things. It's quite an interesting film. It's based on a true story, and it was a true story that I kind of vaguely remembered, but I think it's something that had a much bigger impact in France. It was a Russian spy who'd been based in France, and I think during that period had developed a love of French culture, and he decided that he on his own would be able to bring down the Soviet Union by slowly dripping out some secrets, and he picked on a French, lowly French guy working in Moscow to feed those secrets to. It's got all the classic elements of an espionage thriller. People being paranoid, people wondering if they're being followed, mysterious cars in the background, all of those sorts of things. I mean, it does what it says on the tin in lots of ways. For me, it just lacked a little bit of drama, but it was a fascinating story, and it's something, like I say, I'd not really heard about that much.
So there's two very different new releases this week, and they both start on Royal Wedding Day, Friday the 29th of April. So ignore the wedding and make use of your time at Corner House instead. Okay, let's do our quickfire round. Very predictably, the first one, best music documentary. Andy?
Well, I really liked that documentary that was on, was it last year or the year before? In the Shadow of Giants, the one about the house band at Motown. As I was saying about music documentaries, it opened my eyes to things I didn't really know about.
The one that sprang first to my mind is Madonna, Truth or Dare. And as you say, you have to be interested in the subject as well. Okay, again, very predictable. Best Cold War thriller?
I think in terms of Cold War thrillers, you have to go quite far to get a better one than The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, the Martin Ritt 1960s film with Richard Burton.
Okay, now Andy, I'm going to test you. I'm going to do a line from mine and you've got to tell me which film it is. His brain has not only been washed, as they say, it has been dry cleaned. Come on.
I don't know. Is it the Manchurian Candidate?
Yeah, the Manchurian Candidate.
The Mancunian Candidate, I thought it was for a while.
Yes, I think several people did. No, the Manchurian Candidate. Manchuria is a place in China. It was the film starring Frank Sinatra, directed by John Frankenheimer. Okay, the final one, and this is related to our new cartographies piece that you'll hear in a minute. The best lost long family drama.
Oh, for me, it'd have to be Amar Akbar Anthony, the Bollywood film.
Oh, that's good. I was thinking Aftershock, the recent Chinese blockbuster, but actually I'm going to go for Finding Nemo. So that's the end of our quickfire. Remember, you can tweet in or email in your responses. And if they're good, we'll shout them out next week.
Art, film, books, food, drink. All at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for our mini guide to Corner House and beyond. This week, it's your last chance to see Little White Lies, Submarine and Pina in 2D. So if you want to watch Pina, but 3D does your head in, do come and watch the 2D version. It's about the dancer and directed by Wim Wenders. Don't miss, we have a new British Cinema Quarterly event next Wednesday, the 4th of May at 20 past 6. It's called Island, as in a piece of land, as opposed to our ancestral home across the water. And it's about a young lady who discovers her real family or real birth mother in a remote Scottish island. It's a kind of psychological family drama, and it has lots of stunning landscapes from around the Isle of Mull. And basically, you should go and see it because you should support new British film. There's also a discussion with the co-director, Breck Taylor, afterwards, so check that out. There's still time to sign up for our popular evening courses. We've got 3 courses starting very soon. We have a couple on film, and we also have an excellent course called Introduction to Contemporary Art, Art and Politics, which is co-hosted by yours truly, alongside Dr. Jo McGonigal from the University of Manchester. And that one in particular, which you should book on, starts on Wednesday, the 11th of May at 6:30. You can book in person or online.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
So, back to our major exhibition at the moment. It's called New Cartographers Algeria, France, UK. We had 10 artists involved in this, and so we had lots of artists coming over from France and Algeria. And one of our team members, Layla Cogdell, had a kind of interesting surprise when she started talking to one of the artists named Sophie Albers.
So I've been working at Corner House now for 12 months, and I think it was 6 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, I just out of interest looked at the proposal for New Cartographies. The fact that France and Algeria were being represented in an exhibition for me was really interesting because my grandma actually grew up in Constantine in Algeria and moved back to France when she was 19 years old. So I've always had an interest. I haven't necessarily known lots about it, but so I looked at the exhibition proposal, and there, it was there that I saw Sophie Albers, and I thought, oh, I really recognise the name Albers because my granny's cousin, his surname is also Albers, and but I just thought it might be a coincidence. And then I saw that her work was concentrated around Constantine, Algeria, which was obviously like a Jewish settlement in Algeria at that point. So just out of a whim that night, I just called up my grandma. I was like, oh, mammy, I don't suppose if you know Sophie Albers. And she was like, no, I don't know her, but she is the niece of my cousin. So from that straight away, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. But didn't know much connection. We hadn't ever met before. But it was really interesting to know that she was coming to the exhibition opening and that I'd be able to meet her then.
What I love about being a citizen of the world is that you have family everywhere. So it was really a joy and a surprise and discover that I have a cousin in Manchester. And actually, your cousin, Layla, so Jacques Albers, is our connection. And Jacques has been, it's not just somebody far from my mind or, you know, part of the family history. It's really somebody that I know well. He knows me well. I mean, I grew up around him and his wife and his daughter, so it's really somebody very close. So I imagine we are quite close relatives too. And considering now that was for, I will say, personal family connection, now concerning my work, I'm very happy and I couldn't have more joy or real gift, you know, because if my work is actually done and address itself to the young people to help them also at one point, because we all went through that. I mean, we're young and we know that we are young, we're not so interested by that, you know, but then we grow up and then we transmit also, we have children, we get older, and then our personal history catches up. And that's where I want to, you said your grandmother now is no more among you and your family, and she's the only one who really had a strong memory there. And Jacques also, Jacques is getting old like my father. So I feel like I have a real duty somehow, even so I don't really want to do it, but I feel like it's a duty, you know. It's like I'd rather be, I don't know, in Rio or right. No, I feel it's a duty somehow to transmit it also. And when I see young people, they are interested, but they don't know much about it, you know. And so really that with this exhibition and meeting Layla, it's like a perfect result or consequences or result. That's the word I was looking for. Result of that process, you know, that I've been through, and now I'm able to put in a metaphoric and artistic way. And then, you know, we built kind of bridges between generation and has a new generation also to go toward its own memory and look for it and dig it, because the memory is something that has different layers. You know, there's a lot of work, and it's not just you have a first step approach, but there's a lot of layers in that memory. You know, now we can discuss what is a souvenir, what is memory, what is history, and what is, you know. So I think all these questions will come one day, and the more references you have and the more you know where to connect yourself in the future and where to get your information. And actually the Jews are very good at that, very good. So we've been working there and there, and the memory is kept, mm-hmm. you know. Often I have this conversation with other Algerian friend, and they said, you were able to keep on that memory, because now in Algeria, my generation, when you see all the eradication, voluntary eradication of the memory, you know, many people think, well, why we didn't do this work of memory to begin with? You know, and it's much harder afterward to look for the archives and look for the truth. For me, keeping the memory is part of your duty as a human. The memory is constitutive, is a structure of yourself, of your gene and everything. And I'm a bit sad when I see the young people many, many young people are really into that globalization, identifying with the whole world, with all those cliché and standard that make the world become one, and the small village actually of privileged people who can travel and have a sufficient level of social level to have access to this beautiful little village. But then what about identifying with also, you know, your true history, you know, not just being swallowed by the mediocrity of the whole thing, you know? And also, for me, it's also very dangerous when people start to grab their identity and say, well, I'm this, I'm this, I'm that. It's very dangerous for me in this world, too. So I make a real difference between identity and memory, even so they are totally connected, because to be able to structure your identity, you need to know your memory, too. So, but at one point, it's also important to go forward, not get stuck in the past for the rest of your life. I think that we build up the memory to be stronger to go forward. And I think that's the most beautiful aspect of the Jewish culture, is that they are part of the world. They are citizens of the world. And I think that we should be very open with this and not closed.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose the only memory for me about Algeria was talking to my grandma, seeing photographs of her when she was younger. And so I've been very fortunate and lucky to have a big part of my older generation's history, which has been very prominent in their lives, maybe less so in mine, because I was brought up in England, where people were a bit unaware of maybe the relationship between France and Algeria. And so it's been interesting, not just for me, but also for my friends who don't really know much about that, or people like the younger generation wouldn't really understand these issues that took place. And so it's interesting to have it in an exhibition like it, exploring so many different themes, like the journeys and people going back to visit memories, not just for them but for their ancestors, as well as just out of an interest and curiosity, because I think it's definitely important to be curious about where you come from, and like Sophie said, not to be obsessed with it, but to take hold of it and actually be interested. And I've always there's definitely been an element of me where I've been interested in Algeria, and always really inquisitive of my grandma, of like, what was it like to live then when they moved to France, and seeing like Sophie's work, especially in art form, is really interesting, and her video, I found it really moving with the images, and just seeing it rather than just a photograph is one thing, and that can be quite a moving image of like even music involved. It was really moving. Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have a part of my history brought here and shown different elements of it all as well, and that was really nice.
So do check out our exhibition, New Cartographers. It's totally free. It's open Tuesday to Sunday, 12 till 8, except it closes at 6 on Sunday.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
And now it's time for our staff recommendation of the week. This week it's from Bill Lamb. He's our technical manager. Take it away, Bill.
I recommend NT Live Frankenstein, which is showing this Monday. I've been involved with the programme since the beginning, which was Complicity's A Disappearing Number, which I thought was fantastic. I have seen both versions of Frankenstein earlier in March. Of course, I have to say it's brilliant. Do I have a favourite? I must admit the version we're showing this Monday is probably the one I prefer, which is with Johnny Lee Miller as the creature and Benedict Cumberbatch as Frankenstein. I won't go into too much detail, but it just fits both characters, really. It is fantastic in that pretty much every seat in a cinema is the best seat available because you get the close-ups of the actors. You get some of the shots where you wouldn't necessarily would within the theatre itself. And I must admit, it is quite charming to be able to hear the front stage and with the actors doing their business. But you can also hear from the back surround speakers someone coughing in the audience. It's fantastic. It just works. And of course, knowing that it's been sold out in London and it's tremendously difficult to get a ticket for the live show is a fantastic alternative. And it really works on a big screen.
Thank you, Bill. And so that's NT Live Frankenstein, directed by our patron, Danny Boyle. And that's on Monday, the 2nd of May. I'll be going, so see you there. We'll be back next week. We're going to review 13 Assassins, which we just saw today. It's very, very exciting. And we'll talk a little bit about Japanese samurai films. Meanwhile, to check out what's going on this week, it's all on our website, www.cornerhouse.org. Alternatively, why not follow us on Twitter using @cornerhousemcr or like our new Facebook fan page. That's enough for this week. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Cornerhouse podcast.